I listened to everything that they said to me, I wouldn't be here. And if I took the time to bleed while a tiny little arrow shot my way, I wouldn't be here. The ones who don't do anything are always the ones who try to put you down. And you could spend your entire life walking around in the nowhere land of self-doubt. Cause when you start to doubt yourself, the real world will eat you alive. Time to align your body with your mind. It's hero time. It's time, it's time. It's time to align your body with your mind.
It's hey everybody, time. It's Juan again. Like I was saying yesterday or earlier this week or whenever you're getting this, I was going to fill up the week with some of the panels and stuff I did, and I'm just trying to work out what's going to go first and what's what. So I wanted to just do chronologically backwards, I guess I could say. Some really good advice on this panel. It is the Baltimore Comic Con Indie Comics panel, which was super awesome, really cool. I got to work with Enrique Jang, a longtime friend, good buddy of ours. One of the ones in the trenches with us. It's always doing comics and stuff. She just recently did her 27 anthology. Very successful Kickstarter with it. She did Killer Queen anthology that I was lucky enough to be part of. And she's an all-around, like, badass. And then there's Erica Schultz. Erica Schultz is an amazing talent. Really awesome writer. Writer M3, does a bunch of different work for Dynamite, a bunch of other things she's going to talk about in the intro. Just these two people are just big powerhouses in comics, just hard workers, just banging it out there, and awesome people to listen to. That's kind of why I think it's great, because it's like another kind of voice than the South Florida voices that you get, or just me and Martin talking. So it was just a different panel to do that this time around that I thought was really cool. So I'm not going to even waste time with me yapping at you guys. These are them on here. I'm going to be talking at first because I was thinking they were running late, but they weren't. So me yapping at first, and then they come in. You may not hear the questions too well that people were asking, but you'll get the gist of it as it goes on about what we're answering and what we're exactly doing. Again, some people had high voices and low voices and what have you. I'll try to tweak the audio when I can for it. But I think overall the audio quality is pretty good here. I do apologize for, after a while, I'm tapping the desk while I'm talking. I'm Cuban. We talk with our hands. So, really sorry about that. But either way, whatever I'm saying is worse shit compared to what these girls have to say. So, please listen up, see what's up. And I'll see you at the end. Later. When you're gone, you're so gone. When you're gone, you're so gone. You've got it now, it's time to go. Hero time starts right now. Yeah. Change it. In times of friction, I got truth in times of fiction. I've got no time for the hype. Suicide, I'm not the type. I've got no time for drug addiction. No time for smoking booze. Too strong for a shortened lifespan. I've got no time to lose. It's time to shine.
Anyway, I guess I'll just start because I had two other people that might come up. Originally, it was just going to be me, but I was like, nah, I don't know if that's enough. But they might be coming later. Everybody's really busy downstairs. How are you guys doing? This is the Independent Indie Comics 101 panel. My name's Juan Navarro. I am the publisher and editor-in-chief at Creature Entertainment. We're out of Miami, Florida. We're relatively new. We've been around for 5 years, but I think we just got like national distribution the last year or so, and we're starting to compete and getting our comics out. Luckily, like our first two books that actually got distributed were, you know, sold out in the stores and everything, so we've been doing really well. But I've been doing this like with like no money, no anything, no experience, you know, just all out for the last 5 years. And so because of that, I've been doing panels, just helping people get their creation, their idea. So what I do most of the time on these panels, I just do, you know, my intro, and you guys ask me questions, and I try to answer them to the best of my ability. If you guys, you know, so think about what you guys want to ask, because also everybody's at a different level. Some of you guys might still be in the creative end. Some people are in the business end. Some people are in the printing. You guys might have a finished product. You guys might have a note in a notebook. But either way, I can probably help you, because besides the 5 years I've been with the company, I've been doing this for 20 years as a comic book artist. I was a web comic artist that did a couple of things. We produced a book called Ravenous that I'm really proud of that was sold out in the stores. It's our little werewolf book. And then I produced my own book, Zombie Ears, that started as a web comic and now is a print comic, which has gotten really well received. I've already done 10 issues, which is big for me because it's like, wow, shows I can stick to the work. And now I'm producing a book called Tommy that I'm in the third issue that's done really well across it. Story about a little boy who has an imaginary friend, finds out his imaginary friend's a serial killer. Yeah, that's the kind of stuff I like to do. Which I will always tell you, that's the best thing for you guys to do. Always do the stuff you enjoy, because if you're going to spend hours and hours and hours on a page, that's, you got to be enjoying it, you know. Other than that, we've also done some movie stuff. We've done some film stuff. I've done cons all across the country, San Diego, New York, and everything. We've done Kickstarters one after another. We've done a bunch of other stuff. You know, there's some other people that sometimes they know stuff and everything else. I'm starting a little early.
You did?
Yeah. I got nervous. I got scared.
Sorry.
I know, no. It's one of those things where you're like, oh, it's around the corner. Good, good.
Indie comics.
This is exactly what happens when you do indie comics.
Sorry.
So introduce you guys.
Are you recording this?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm so recording it.
It's just going to be the podcast of us like breathing heavy and like huffing and being like,
You know what? That'll be the most honest thing I've ever heard on indie comics ever.
All right, I'm putting my knee up. I'm sorry. I have a bad leg. I'm putting my leg up.
Yeah. She's just trying to be cool. She's just the fun.
I swear to God, I'll show you the scars. He's not filming it, so we're okay.
Yeah. I can hear her knee up. I'd like to introduce, you guys introduce yourselves, because I want you guys to say all your credits and everything else.
Oh,
I just forgot their names. No, Enrica Jang and Erica Schultz. But
Jang and Schultz, we sound like
Jang and Schultz,
like a lady cop thing. Lady
cop thing. Jang and Schultz on the road.
After you.
Hi. After you. My name is Enrica Jang. I am a comics writer, graphic novelist. That sounds so great.
But you've done so that.
But I'm also editor in chief of my own small independent publishing company, Red Stylo Media. Very recently, we going from indie comics to, you know, they're little indie fish and then they're bigger indie fish. And I've been on my own company for the last 5 years, but we're tiny, we're teeny tiny, just moved to Baltimore, and then but one of our books just got picked up by another indie publisher, Action Lab Comics.
That's a big deal, people.
It's a big deal.
So our next problem, I'm going to tell you about the next stuff, because that's exciting, and if you want to know about the stuff we do now, you can come see me. Right now we're working on, we just finished an anthology, and it's going to drop in December, called The 27th Club. It's a comic anthology inspired by the music of music's infamous 27 Club. So artists who died at age 27, Kurt Cobain, Janis Joplin, Amy Winehouse, Jimi Hendrix, Jim Morrison, a whole bunch of, a whole list of others going back all the way to the 1800s. And that collection, again, got picked up by Action Lab. And then my graphic novel, The House of Montresor, is... do you have any Poe fans in the audience? Edgar Allan Poe fans? Yeah. My art partner, Jason Spence, and I, we adapted The Castle of Amontillado for a comic. And The House of Montresor is a sequel to Cask. And that's going to be out in January. Also from Action Lab.
You wanna like just hook me up with that one so I can just lean back. Oh no, that's cool. All right.
Me?
Okay. My name is Erica Schultz. I am a writer, not a publisher. Well, I'm a self-publisher, but I don't publish other people's stuff like Red Style publishes other people's stuff. I started with an indie book called M3 with a friend of mine, Vicente Alcazar, who is an artist. And we self-published that, and I've also worked with Marvel on the adaptation, the graphic novel adaptation of the TV show Revenge that was on ABC that came out last year. I had a story in Vertigo Quarterly, the first quarterly for this year, Pop. It's a really funky story with an amazing artist named Sarah Richard. I have a story in the 27 Club that Enrica published. I've also done some fun and quirky one-shots with Claire Connolly. One of them got buzz. It's called The Unauthorized Biography of Winston Churchill, the Documentary, and nobody heard of it here, so it didn't get as much buzz as I thought. I've done a lot of lettering work and also design and artwork as well. I try and focus more on writing, but if design and lettering work comes my way, I'm certainly not going to say no to it. I have a mortgage, so...
So yeah, so most of the time, I hope you guys have been sitting there mulling over your brains and you have projects in your head. But like I said, most of the time what I do is an intro of everybody and then just get to questions. Because I really hate when you do a panel and it's been like, I've been drawing since I was 5 years old and I always want to, I hate that crap. So if you guys have any questions or anything about projects you're doing or comics you're doing or anything about, you know, the antics of it, please feel free to dive in. By the other side of it, I was going to say, so how long have you guys been? You guys have been making comics how long?
5 beautiful, long years.
We started like the same time.
We did.
You and me. Yeah, because we met at the cons.
Just kind of your beginning when you're, you go from self-published to independently published, and you put together your team of people. You're going to shows and you're meeting folks, and then you start on one side of the table, and then you end up somehow on the other side of the table.
Yeah.
And
you're
like, weird.
But once you're in,
yeah.
And you run away and you join the circus.
Exactly.
You start to see a lot of the same faces, and you start to network on the ground and meet folks. So yeah, we met in Miami, and it was really funny because when I met the guys from Creature. Of the entire convention center, the one place that the roof was leaking, their booth was right under it.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
And poor John Aloha was trying to protect all the books with his
arm. Yeah, we were, like, covering it and, we're like, moving the comics. And once one of them got wet, we're like, oh, look, Varian Edition. It got wet at the time.
That's awesome, actually.
Yes.
Stealing that.
Yeah. And then I met you, Erica, later on through Enrica.
Yeah, we met. I think I actually met you in 2012 at Heroes Con. We were on a panel together.
Yes.
We were on an indie comics panel together at Heroes Con, and it was so ridiculous. I flew down the night before. My flight was supposed to get in at like 8 o'clock at night. I had a dinner scheduled with a pretty prominent writer and her husband, and I'm not gonna tell you who. And I was like so excited, and my flight got delayed, and I ended up showing up at the hotel at like 12:30, and so embarrassed that I stood them up. And then I went in, I did the panel with you guys, I did like an hour on the floor, and then I had to jump in a car and go back to the airport and fly back to Jersey.
Wow.
It was like, I did not sleep, it was very, very strange, and yeah. And some weird dude from Atlanta would like not leave me alone at the bar. I was like, if I give you my business card, will you please let me go to sleep?
Comics, everybody!
Comics!
But yeah, no, and I would say, like, and I think you said it really well, like, the whole running off with the circus thing. Because I've done a couple of panels where I've, like, talked to people. I have these young kids now that are doing indie comics now in South Florida, and I see them at cons, and they have their booth. And there's, like, 6 or 7 of them, and it's just, like, this little pod of people.
And they're like, we saved our allowance and
yeah.
Put it together.
And they're like, yeah, and they're just like, yeah, she's now, like, you know, she's doing comics full-time. I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, oh, she's using, like, her tuition money and credit cards to, like, do stuff. So I'm like, oh, God, please, like, do this right. Like, don't blow so much money into this. And
well, that's the thing. I mean, you can do comics however you want. I mean, it is your own business however you want to do this. I still have a day job. I'm the type of person where, you know, I had student loan debts. I don't want to get myself more into debt. So I'm pacing myself with how I can keep up with myself financially in terms of how to make comics and things like that. I know people who will quit their day job and max out, you know, 5 credit cards and take business loans and things like that. And that's their business. They can, if they can make that work, good for them. That doesn't work for me personally. I don't like having a lot of loans out anyway. That's just the way I'm wired. But I know people who've done that and they've been successful at it. But if you want to make sure that you're going to make your rent every month or your mortgage or, you know, your electric bill or something like that, try and think about, like, a nest egg. Because if you're not coming, if you're not
or
making...
Sugar daddy.
Or sugar mama.
Sugar mama, let's be...
Because if you're not, if you're going to shows and you're making money at shows, but you realize that the money that you're bringing in, you're short, have a little nest egg to be like, you know what, this month I need to take a little bit out of that just so I get my, you know, all my notes are paid. But that's just my advice. And like I said, everybody does it their own way. Yeah. And it's like no judgment. Do what you got to do.
I think there's just ways of pacing yourself. And there's just ways. Like I started in the webcomics field originally. And webcomics, at most, maybe $100 a year because if you want to buy a server, you know, some server space and have it, that's the most you're going to spend, you know. Or you can do a Tumblr. Or you can do a WordPress and put your comic out. It's one way to start. That's no cost, and I always tell people that's the best way to test out a product or test out your story. You know, a lot of people have that 1,200-page saga in their head of that just spans multi-generations and everything. I'm like, do 8 pages. Yeah. Just do 8 pages and just post it on a Tumblr and see what people think.
Well, follow-through, I think, is big. And you were talking about that earlier, about that's what editors want to see if you want to keep it that.
Yes. Just for starting out, I had a grand vision about where I wanted to go, what I wanted to do, and I started with my series, Azteca, and we did a Kickstarter for that project, and this was the second year that Kickstarter even existed, so most of the time you were explaining to people, hey, there's this website, I'm not going to ask you for money directly, if you want to help me, and you sort of have that talk with folks. Starting out, I wish I'd had more respect for, just as a writer, filling out my own portfolio. I had this grand idea about the big project that I wanted to get out there, and 12 issues at the time seemed like, I can do that, and I'm not trying to do something too difficult, but putting together my first comic, 12 issues is actually a really big deal. So not really having a sense of how long that should take, and not really having a sense of, you know, when I'm telling other people about this grand project that I'm working on, it would have been nice to have some smaller pieces to show them. And if you can write something really engaging in 4 pages or 8 pages, you're a really good writer. If you can't impress someone in the short amount of time you have their attention and they don't know you, you are a good writer. Whereas if you need 12 pages to tell anybody, if you need, like, you know, 12 issues to tell anybody the one thing that you're trying to tell them, no.
Yeah.
Do it, if you can do it short, you can do it sweet, and you can get people's attention with that. Boom! This is what being a professional is. This is what is being good.
Yeah.
On the other side of it is, as an indie editor, I do need to see that because I don't have a lot of time to read your opus. I don't care about your opus. Trust me now. It's not that I don't. It's not that you're not a wonderful person and I don't really like you. It's that I have to work too, and it's going to take more work. So impress me now. So yeah, that's the balance you want.
And I think it's a big deal to like finish stuff. You know, like. Even if it's a 24-hour, you know, they do a thing, was it 24-hour comic or whatever? You know, something like that. If you want to do one of those, that you finish a comic book at 24 pages in 24 hours and something that you draw with your feet pretty much and you just put it together and you staple it, that's something. You take something. Because even for me, as an editor of my company, you know, I look at what somebody can complete. And if you've never completed a story or it takes you 6 days to draw a page, oh, wow, you're cool, but this isn't going to work. So if you get something completed, for a lot of us, we look at it like, oh, okay, cool. You've got something done. You have under your belt, you know. And that's just training. It's just getting that out there, I think. I think that's a big deal.
I also think if you do short 8 pages, what you can do is, you can do different genres. So, you know, you have your 12-issue opus, which is in one particular genre, whether it's, well, if you're talking about Azteca, it's the sort of supernatural crime. So then you can do, like, instead of doing all 12 issues, you could do, like, an 8-page sampler of that. And then do an 8-page sampler of sci-fi or an 8-page sampler of something else. And then this way, you have a story. You have something that you can show people. There was a writer a couple of years ago who came to me at New York Comic Con, and he had, It was probably about 16 pages total, but he had two 5-page stories, and no, it was 18 pages because it was 2 5-page stories and an 8-page story, and one was a Western, one was a crime thriller, and one was sci-fi. And that showed, I tell a, you know, beginning, middle, end in these short little things, and these are different genres that I can write in. And it was great, and it was a perfect portfolio piece because it's one little book bound together, and it was well written, the art was good, he got different artists for each genre that would, you know, really match with each genre. So that's something to think about.
Yes, right.
So being a creator is, I'm not going to say that's the easy part at all, but that's one thing, that's one field. Starting your own company is something completely different. Being a good business person and anticipating, you know, what your costs are going to be is a completely different thing. So from the beginning of that, could you talk to us maybe a little bit about how you started your publishing companies and what unexpected things you came across and things that you wish you knew before you started to make it a much smoother process?
I mean, for Creature, one of the biggest things is that we pretty much were a studio. We're a creative studio. We just recently readjusted the company because we pretty much, not closed, but put to the side our film side. We're doing film. And we put that to one side because we said, all right, let's focus on comics. This is where we're getting real traction. And because of that, now we went from 8 members to 5 members. But that was, that's artists. Those are writers, and those are the publishers. So what happens is that we all have an even stake. That's kind of bad, because now everybody's, well, I'm your boss. Well, I'm your boss. You know? And that's one thing that in the structure of the company, somebody had to come up ahead, and it ended up being me. And I had to be the kind of head cutter for everything. So I would say always have a clear...
I know how to
keep the clowns in check, okay? But a structure needs to be there. I would say whoever's going to take point. A lot of times in relationships that I've seen that have worked, or I've seen a lot of times it's the writer doing the business side because the artist is so work intensive. They're doing so much labor. So the writer might take in the business end. We did a lot of work for like a year together before we did like an LLC and everything else and got all our paperwork together and did the partnership as we should because there was still a lot of fluctuations. But things have to be, I would say the biggest thing is communication is key, especially in any kind of partnership. If you're doing it all yourself, it's great. But if not, whatever you're doing, be direct, be honest. One thing is critique. One thing is criticism. So it's like, in that kind of situation, like, I mean, there's a lot of times we look to just be truthful. We didn't do that well this year here at Baltimore. We're okay. We're all right. And so some of my partners are like, I'm never coming back. Just, you know. And I'm like, look, we have to look at the long game. The show's not over yet. Da-da-da-da. Keep morale up. You know, stuff like that. But we had to be honest. Because if you don't have that, that's when the frustration happens. And it's not in the first thing. It's in the third thing, the fourth thing, the fifth thing that happens. And then somebody blows up. And it's like any relationship. Like, you'd be arguing about who didn't take out the garbage, but then it's like, but you didn't do this last week. And I'm like, where did that come from? And it's because, you know, those have been stepping up. So I would say in any partnership, be very communicative. And what you want. Because some people, you know, you might have one party just wants to get the comic out, wants to get a story out, and they're just like, whatever. The other person wants to make a career out of it and make money and do this, and, oh, I want to make a movie out of it, you know. That's another thing. Like, some people just want to make a movie. Then go make a movie. Don't make a comic. You know what I'm saying? Like, if that's your goal, go make the movie. Your thing is to make an animated or make a toy. Go make the toy and don't bother yourself with the comic because the comic's not going to guarantee you anything, you know? And you're almost guaranteeing failure if you do that, you know? That's what I would say on that end, but...
The piece of advice that I give to people, because my company was kind of an accident, just to give you sort of a brief history of my company, I started with one title, and my idea was to be a creator, but then I also wanted to... In comics is one of the few industries that's going to tell you you've got to do what you're telling me you want to do first. Prove you can do it first, and then I'll look at you. Prove you can do it first, and then I'll hire you or publish you. So you do take on all those roles when you're first starting. You have to be, unless you've got a bunch of people with the same vision who are going to work together, you are the one, you are editing, you are writing, you are managing the project, whatever role you happen to have to put the project together. And if that's you. So I had to put together a comic before I was going to get hired. And I felt that I could apply the same model to editing. I wanted to be an editor as well. And so I started to, I didn't want to be a vanity press. I wanted to show that I was serious about being a publisher. And so I started taking on other people's work, and that's where the anthologies came out. And we started doing a themed anthology, and this was my endeavor to sort of prove that I could manage a project. And it wasn't because, this is my beautiful, these are my beautiful words, to take my company seriously. That was the accidental evolution of the company. But from the creative point of view, I have had a crisis over time, you know, as a writer, because the minutiae of business and you're smacking yourself against a wall of indifference. If you don't have to be a publishing company to do that, but that doesn't mean you don't treat your book like its own business. Mm-hmm. You make strong business decisions. You don't throw good money after bad. And sometimes you have to kill your darlings. A way to combat that is, we joked about this in one of our panels before, is having air at the stair.
I always have an alternate ending.
But have a project that you're putting your heart into. Be committed to it. Say what you're going to do. Call your shot. Don't try to diffuse too much. Dazzle people with the business of the business plan for the comic if it's not the story that's connecting. And treat your story like this is the calling. This is, and make the best decisions for that project. But just understand, if you're cutting off your own head, your project doesn't exist. So you have to make the tough decisions. Don't throw good money after bad. If something that you really have your heart on isn't working, it's not that you put it aside. You step back, you get clear, and then you give it the time it needs to find the right solution to do that. But in terms of, on top of that, though, if you do want to get into independent publishing, you want to be a publisher, really understand how the business works. Obviously, you won't know everything until you're actually doing it. Again, you run away from the circus, mm-hmm. and you finally figure out how the high wire works. Mm-hmm. And that's just unfortunate.
Isn't that what happened to Dick Grayson's parents?
Or was that exactly.
And everything worked out then.
There's no way you're going to know everything when you start. Endeavor to be prepared. Endeavor to know what you're talking about. Endeavor to see what other people are doing. Open your ears. Listen. Don't think that you have to reinvent the wheel, because it saves you a lot of time.
Yeah, when we do conventions, I mean, you know, and even besides of conventions, we've talked when we send emails and, you know, we'll be like, hey, I need a printer, or I need this, or you need an artist for this, or do you know a guy, you know, you communicate. And so when you do a lot of these panels and you're doing a lot of these places, when you do these shows, you're gaining connections. And so because of that, you know, you'll talk. And it's the same thing, and that's like when you have to have a good reputation. Because we've had artists and stuff, and somebody comes over and they're like, man, look at this guy's portfolio. This is really good. This guy's awesome. And then you'll talk to somebody. He's like, yeah, but it takes forever. Or he's not uncommunicative. This guy's not the best artist in the world. He's okay. But you go, yeah, but he gets deadlines done like this, you know. So it's amazing how that reputation is what'll click if you take somebody on or take somebody to go with you, you know. So you have to have a good reputation, you know. I always tell people the same thing with Creature, like, I don't pay a lot, but I pay. Like, I'm, you know, like, there's nobody out there that can say, hey, Creature ripped me off. Never. You know. They're cheap bastards. Yes. That's for sure. But that's the reason why, again, like, it goes back to that communication and having that honesty. And so people know who you are and where you're coming from at any time, you know.
I think it also, in terms of managing expectations, like, it also goes down to what are your actual goals. Like, Enrica's goal was she wanted to be a writer, but she also wanted to be an editor. Your goal is you were making films, you were making comics and everything. My goal was never to self-publish. I mean, when we put out M3, the first issue of M3, we shopped it around because we wanted a publisher to take the brunt of the work. We wanted to be able to, Vicente wanted to work on art, I wanted to work on the writing, and that was it. And let somebody else put the book together and get it printed and ship it out. We didn't want to have to do that. Rejection is a bitch.
Yeah.
The only reason why we self-published M3 was because we said, you know, this is something that we believe in, and it's something that we feel is too good to just get rejected and go away. So we're going to put the time in, and we're going to do it, and that was a conscious decision. But my goal was never to self-publish. My goal was always, as M3, like we were talking about, we were going to get the first issue of M3 out. It's 24 pages. It's like a proof of concept. I can write something, beginning, middle, end. It is done. I've got it done. and it is all packaged and nice and pretty. Hire me, Marvel in DC. And if you if your goal is to get a job from a publisher, Marvel, DC, IDW, whomever, Action Lab, whomever, it's you have to prove to them that you can do something, and you have to you have to make your own comics first. I mean, everybody says it. You go to San Diego, the one comment you hear is, "You want a job in comics? Make your own comic. You have a job in comics. Congratulations, you did it." But you actually have to do that. You have to make the comic. Are we taking questions yet? Because yeah. That gentleman has
yeah, up and down. Yes.
Hi.
When you're looking at portfolios, like you put together a portfolio. You mm-hmm. start with small bits, and then you put a book together that shows as much of your work as you can to give to someone so that they can look through it in a little bit amount of time. So that's like step one. But what are you looking for when you're seeing an independent project like that?
Well, most of the time, I don't want to. You know, sometimes you don't have the finished thing. You don't have the finish, but I will try to see. Like I say, sometimes going back to. Maybe take 8 pages of what it is, highlight a big plot point in the scene, create that. I sometimes like to see like a character Bible or a story Bible that kind of shows what the characters are or what you have planned as far as the design or the art or what it looks like, so we can get the general feel. Like a lot of times when you pitch a comic to some of these publishers, you're not pitching like a story with a question mark. No, you're pitching the whole thing, how it ends, the beginning, middle, end, what's this, what's that, and so that it's a clear picture. Because amazingly enough, from my experience, a lot of art directors are really unimaginative. So if you don't explain everything...
Are you looking at that to me because I used to be an art director?
Yes. No. No, but I've had that I've had that experience where you really have to spell out everything yeah. so that a publisher can understand what you're doing. And so I would say try to create as much as possible without investing, you know, a huge amount of time either.
I think another thing is that you go through Comic-Con and everything, and you're looking at all the tables, and a lot of people have pinups, and if you're looking, like you're looking to put together like a portfolio, sequential art, they want to see your page and panel breakdowns, and that's important, because if you've got pinups and just like almost like cover art, like these great dynamic poses, that's great, but they want to see the way the story is going to progress visually.
The storytelling, yeah.
So having sequential art in a portfolio would be good too. Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Pinups
are fun. It's awesome. You know, somebody going through a brick wall is like the best thing to draw ever. You know, draw Peter Parker serving a cup of coffee. Sucks. You know, but that's the kind of things that you have to show. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that. And if you're going to be a cover artist, be a cover artist. One of our partners is a cover artist for Marvel, and he does all that, and that's what he does. And I always tell him, "Why don't you do sequentials? Don't want to." Okay. You know. It really comes down to whatever your process is. I mean, I'm still old school. I still have a light box. I still do everything by hand, except for lettering. Everything is done.
No, you can still let Chris Giarrusso hand letters his books.
Why?
Because
that hurts so much. I had to do hand lettering in college.
Chris Giarrusso, he has G-Man out for Image, and he hand letters his books, with the exception of the newest one, because it's a prose book, but still.
Oh, yeah.
Can
so,
you imagine hand lettering prose?
That's just so bad. So, I mean, on that end, you can really do everything. I mean, you know, the classic process has always been pencils, inks, then colors, and then scan. But that used to be, you used to take a photo, literally make a photo plate of an image and then print that. Because of that, you had to have an inker, define the lines, that's everything. Now that we're in digital, you can scan pencils now and print those. You can, you know, you can have a total penciled art and everything else. So you really can do whatever you like. A lot of it is programs like the Adobe Suites, like the whole Adobe CC.
Photoshop. Manga Studio Pro.
Yeah.
Just a little bit here. We do work with, Brett Styler does work with the Inkwell Awards. Mm-hmm. So I do want to say, inking is a talent, and if you can find a really good one, that's gold.
Oh,
so
I'm not diminishing inking at all, by the way.
Yes. And it's something that I actually learned with my first series and have come to appreciate the more I've worked with this group of folks. Inking can be.
No, all I need is, I've already had it happen that I've had an inker step in and work on a page, and I'm like, oh my god, this is so much better. Like, okay. Like, I'm trying not to freak out. Like, oh yeah, man, it's good. It's good. Oh my god.
But I think that's the whole thing about comics is that, like, instead of, like, writing a novel, when you're writing a novel, it's usually just you telling a story, and maybe sometimes you'll have a co-writer. But comics is a completely collaborative process. Whether it's a different guy for penciling, inking, and coloring and lettering, that's one thing. But it is a collaborative process. Now you were talking about, like, printing and things like that. Are you talking about you want, like, tech specs or?
Well, I'm just curious about the process. Mm-hmm. I don't know what you do to take whatever arts you get and turn it into the book.
Well, basically, if you're working traditionally, you're working on basically an 11 by 17 sheet of paper. You draw everything out, you scan it in, and then that gets shrunk down to a 7 by 10.5 bleed. Which just that just means that it's 7 by 10.5. Then that gets trimmed to 6.625 by 10.4375 to get printed. So, depending on if you're doing
my
your
head
own,
hurt.
What?
My head hurt.
10.25.
No, it depends. It depends.
It depends, but
I do have to say
6.625 by 10.4.
The word bleed means that you have a little.
Extra,
so
yes.
When it cuts, you're not losing.
Yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. The cut size is 6.625.
You know, I'm fired. All right, bye. All right. I'm glad I moved my stuff out of your house this morning. but depending on if you're using a different person for coloring. So the easiest way to do this is to stagger it because it gets done faster. So you do pencils and inks, you format your page, you hand that page off to both your colorist and your letterer. Your letterer works on black and white. Your colorist is working on the black and whites too. So your letterer will then hand you a black and white PDF file, and then you'll go through and you'll be like, okay, well, you know what? I want to change the wording in this balloon, the wording in that balloon, blah, 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 whatever. And while that's going on, your colorist is building up the colors for all the books. And then what's supposed to happen, if it works out, if everybody gets their specs right, what's supposed to happen is you're supposed to be able to just take out your black plate that you've been lettering on, plop in your color plate, and then spit out a PDF that everybody's happy with and email it to the printer, and then the printer does all the magical stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And they make your books. And then it depends on the printer, whether their printer wants a PDF, if they want individual files for each page.
Yeah.
Printers are very, very different. Rika and I have worked with a printer that we've gotten very close to who is very collaborative and helps us out a lot, and he likes PDF files. I know other printers want individual pages. It really depends on the printer that you work with.
Yeah, and then from there, that depends on if you're doing a low print run, you're going to go to a digital printer.
Yeah.
If you're going to do a high print run, you're going to go to a web printer. So web printers are in the thousands. You know, a low print run, like a digital printer, they can do one copy.
Yeah.
They can do 50 copies. You know, it all depends.
But they're not doing 10,000 copies. That's the point. It's like,
and there's a difference in quality.
Yeah, there's a difference in quality. There's also a difference in, depending on the printers. Rika and I were talking about this when we were walking over. Depending on the printers, if you order 100 books, they're at this cost. But if you order 500 books, then it's more money, but your cost per unit ends up going down.
Mm-hmm.
And each printer has, like, their own threshold.
Mm-hmm.
With, oh, well, if you order 150 more books, the cost will go down. Oh, when this printer says if you order 300 more books, the cost will go down. So it's very individualized when it comes to printing and stuff like that.
And then you got
to
figure out shipping. And that's a whole other bag.
It would be good, when you're looking for a printer, it is good to try and, because you might look and be like, oh, this is a really good cost per unit. Each book is going to cost me $1. But if their shipping cost is exorbitant, then each book isn't going to cost you a dollar anymore. Each book is now going to cost you $3. So make sure that you take all of those expenses into account before you start saying, okay, what's my profit margin going to be? Even though comics don't really have a profit margin.
The bit of advice I would give is be realistic about how many books you're actually going to move. And that's difficult to gauge when you're first starting. Do you have a rule of thumb in terms of, you know, when you're beginning for a beginner versus for a company run, for our anthologies, for instance, each of the creators on the book gets a copy. So as a small business, I have to figure that price into my unit cost, because it's not just the cost of printing that I have to give. You know, we had 54 creators on this last book, and each of them was going to get one. So I'm giving 54 books away, and that's
money.
An exceptional amount of money if you're printing in a small volume. So we had to print big. But my very first comic, I printed 3,000 copies of my first issue Azteca, and it did have a typo. And all these years later, I still have those boxes in my house. And I will give each of you a comic if you send me an email. I'll send one to you. And that's just, it's getting your unit cost down, but throwing...
Part of it for us is, how much room in my living room is there? It's like, I don't...
Do you have a warehouse?
Yeah. I mean, unless you have a warehouse, which is my living room, it's not going to... Yeah, for us, it's very... You know, with digital printing, you can do 25. You need another 25, you call the printer up. Before coming here, we were low on a bunch of books. I went to New York Comic Con coming out 2 weeks. We shipped some books to New York, and then I told the printer I needed more books. He shipped it here. And he printed it, shipped it, and done. So it's good in that way, you know. That's the good part of digital. Digital is more expensive per unit. So when you're selling a comic for $4 and it costs you two and change, you're not making that much profit. You know?
So just assume it's you at a table. It's just you. And you've got your stack of books, and it's a two-day show. You'd be doing really, really well to sell, 20 books?
Probably.
For the whole weekend. 20. And then nobody's going to want to spend, $10 on necessarily just one issue. So that's not a lot of money necessarily. So you're leveraging lots of other opportunities. You're like, who are you going to meet? Do you have a mailing list? Are you going to try to build your audience? And you're making an investment in yourself in the beginning, but then,
there's no overnight success. There's no one show and you're a millionaire.
Be realistic about what you need. Don't try to, throw good money after bad if something's not working.
You said something great on Friday, real quick. We did a panel on Friday, and you said, you have to measure your own success. Is your success that you're going to make $1 million? If that's the case, then guess what? You're never reaching that goal. You were talking about how this wasn't that great of a show. I'm going to be honest. It wasn't that great of a show with me either. But I was able to meet up with an editor that had what?
It's a good show for me.
It's a good show for her. But I was able to meet up with an editor that I've worked with before, and I'm going to get more work from him. So I didn't sell a lot of books at my table, but it's a good show that way. That is a successful interaction. That's something that's in the plus column. So you sort of have to work it out that way. But like I said, if you want to say, if you give yourself a goal and you say, well, I paid $200 for my table, I want to make $500 at this show. Be realistic. I paid $200 for my table. I have a book out. I want to sell 10 books, 15 books, and try and make it manageable. You have to manage your own expectations, because you're going to be your own worst enemy in this sometimes, and you're going to get really hard on yourself about, well, I should have done this better. You have to go easy on yourself, but you also have to be realistic about your goals.
Mm-hmm. So. The gentleman in the back, he was first.
So following on that, in what ways do you market your actual publications? Like, you're self-publisher, so how do you market comics?
Depends. I think it depends on the genre a lot of times. Like, you're horror.
Mm-hmm.
So you can market, the horror market is enormous. Yeah. Like, you've got all these different outlets that you can work with.
And it all depends. Like, even within that, there's always tones to it. Look, obviously you're going to do the social media thing. Facebook, Tumblr, Twitter.
Social media is required. Yes. Anything that's free, you have no excuse not to try to take advantage of, right? So Facebook, Tumblr, Twitter, it doesn't
Instagram,
cost you anything. Yeah. And you can go to a site like Hootsuite or other sites that you can sort of schedule different kinds of releases.
We use Buffer.
Right. And then Twitter has a new capability right now, and I'm still looking into how much this costs, but now Twitter has enabled functionality where people can purchase directly in the app and Twitter. So this is like this sexy. New frontier. Of like, that's sexy. But the general rule that I just like, general thing I want to throw out there as a recommendation is any site that I find that allows us to submit for free, like even Comixology, which is, you know, everybody knows, you may not get accepted to Comixology, or they may like sit on the review process forever before they finally approve the book that you submitted to them 6 months ago. But once you're finally, it doesn't cost you anything.
Yeah.
To submit to them.
I mean, does that actually work? I mean, is that generally the same?
I look, from my personal experience, I wouldn't put money into it. I feel that a lot of it, especially in the beginning of Facebook, there was a lot of excitement. There was a lot of people were excited, people were interacting. Now they figured out the game and they know how to manipulate it. And the same thing for Twitter, the same thing for everything. Now it's more about communication with your audience that you gain. And likes and retweets and whatever does not translate to dollar signs.
I think at one point it did in the beginning.
In the beginning, the Wild West part.
Yeah,
and it was
exactly.
All exciting.
Exactly.
And but I will say, I think more going to conventions has been our biggest thing, and engaging audiences, because sometimes half of it is going to be yourself and you, who you are, and if they like you, they'll like your book more. And they're willing to give it a chance. And that's what it's worked for us. You know, my partner, John Ayua, has been around in comics since the 90s. He started Double Impact. He was there for the big rise and the fall of, like, comics. And he's known it for years. We go to a con, and there's people like Jimmy Palmiotti and all these guys. They know him. And they're like, hey, what's up? Hey, John, what's up? But he always has such a great way of talking to people. They just remember him. And because of that, they'll come back and they'll buy. And now after 5 years, we have a small... We go to New York Comic Con, and we just see friends. All these fans that have been behind us for so long. And it's helped us in the long run, because then when I go and say, all right, I'm doing a Kickstarter for this, and I send I put a message on Facebook, and yeah, we only have, what, I think 3,000, 4,000 likes on Facebook, but they're real likes, they're real people. They're people that really like us. Like, they followed us, they do shit. So when I go and put it out there, they actually go, and I'll see them reposting it, giving money to the Kickstarter, supporting it, telling their friends.
And I can't give you money. So there's exactly. No reason not to make yourself as easy to find as possible.
Another important thing is to support each other. Mm-hmm. That's another thing. Is like we're. Look. Some people will say to you, you go to Artist Alley. You look to your left. You look to your right. Those are your competitors. Technically, yes. I'm going to say that. Technically, yes. But at the same time, if you're posting something, how many times do I retweet your shit?
Yeah.
And it's shit, but I retweet it anyway. No, but like the whole thing of like, you know, when we had, when Enrique was doing 27, yes, I was involved in it. I wrote a story, but we were tweeting it out all the time. Mm-hmm. We were posting about it all the time. Whenever, if you're doing a Kickstarter, you put it on Twitter. Mm-hmm. I see it, you know. Help other people, because that means, first of all, it shows that you're a cool person and you're cool with everybody else, and like people are going to be like, hey, great, everybody likes to be liked. I mean, that's a cool thing too. But also it shows that, like, look, we're all in this together, we're all trying to do this together, let's help each other. Because you do horror, I don't write horror, and I don't even really like horror very much, but you know what, if it helps you out because you're my friend, boom, I'm going to repost it. You know, and that's kind of the thing. Like, help each other out. And I know this dude's arm is dying. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
What's just a good way to go about finding an artist if you're just doing the writing?
I always do this
cover
trick.
Artist right there.
I'll just do this trick right now. How many of you are artists? How many of you are writers? All right, talk to each other. You're at a convention. This is the best part to do it.
It's the only way.
Yeah, it's the only really. I mean. There's ways of going about it online.
Like DeviantArt and things like that.
Yeah. There's Digital Webbing on their forum. They have a collaboration. They have one that's for paid, you know, if you want to, like, hire an artist, and the other one for collaboration. It's a good way of getting stuff out there. There's people that just constantly stock that page. You'll get a lot of, like, Filipino and Ecuadorian
Eastern
artists. Eastern European artists. They're like, I like help work with you, yes. So stuff like that, and you're like, what? And they just want to get hired. But by the other side of it, you'll, you know, find other people that are trying to, artists out there that want to do a story. So, but I think the best thing is to do cons and talk to people and have face-to-face. Because if you can get them excited about it as a writer, then it'll reciprocate, and they'll really get excited about doing your work.
The reason I say it's the only way, it's like in this age of internet dating, we can find anything online, and that's true. But the one thing I've seen that sticks with me is I didn't have necessarily a lot of money to begin. But money wasn't the thing that necessarily made my project, like one of my first projects, fall apart. And I've seen some people come in with a lot of money in their role, and they're ready to throw it at the brick wall that is comics. And just because they're the hot shot that can go into a room and like see an artist that they like and say, I will give you lots of money, that's not going to make their project go. So to me, the only way, the best way to find an artist is to like go to a show, take a look at what you like. Don't assume that you know what the motivation is. Don't assume that money is the motivator for this artist that you're talking to. Yes, they want money. They want to be paid.
Unless they're independently wealthy.
Yes. If they have a monocle and they have like a powdered wig, then it's safe to say.
That guy's a dick. Don't talk to
him. That guy. I draw comics.
And like a solid gold cigarette holder.
I draw comics on occasion.
But because you have to work so closely with people, you have to try if you can. Talk to someone and get a good vibe with them. As an independent publisher who publishes anthologies, over time, my new trick is when they submitted to the anthology, when they did a story, it was an opportunity to work on that small project, that small story.
8 pages.
And if they came through and it wasn't, as the project manager, I mean, like, you know, the power's great. Listen, it's awesome. But if it's a headache and, they're technically minded and they can meet the deadline and they're not making you sweat and you have a good relationship, to being able to work on that small project and get it done and the satisfaction of getting it done, I know I can go to that person for the next project and count on them. So go to shows, talk to people, get that good connection, and establish your working relationship, because we've all been in, a lot of people have been in an office with that jerk, and you don't want to go with that guy.
Yeah. So. You just don't.
Yeah. Another question? Second question. If you produce a graphic novel and you want to sell it somehow to all these comic book stores around the country, was it Preview Magazine?
Diamond Distributor.
Okay, yeah. So you place an ad in that, a month or two before, and hopefully...
The Diamond question.
Okay, yeah. So this is the question that actually got me killed at the panel in Heroes Con. All right, you are in Diamond through Action Lab. 27 and House of Monsters is in Diamond through Action Lab.
We had another book through Diamond a few years
Yes,
ago.
The Unprofessionals.
Oh,
sorry. So, Diamond, this is what happened to me at New York Comic Con a couple of years ago. We had just finished the first trade of M3, the first issues 1 through 6, and we had it out, and Diamond kind of does this secret shopper thing, because New York Comic Con's a 4-day show. So on Thursday and Friday, you get people, they come to your table, and they sort of like, look at your stuff, and you know, they might buy something, they might not, doesn't matter. And, you know, you just think that they're just a normal con-goer, and everything's cool. And then on Sunday, you see the same person show up in a polo that has the Diamond logo on it, and you see them, and they're not sort of just, like, browsing the aisles. They literally have, like, they're very myopic. I'm going to this table, that table, that table, that table. And they know exactly, they've already scoped out who they want to say, okay, I'm from Diamond, and we would like to talk to you about carrying your book. You can solicit Diamond. You can send your book to Diamond. That didn't happen to me. They came to me. I have no idea why. So when Volume 2 came out, I had already had a relationship with them, so then all I had to do was then send them Volume 2 and the information for Volume 2, and then it was like, okay, here we go, it's in. You can submit to them, though. You went through the submission process.
We went through the submission process. They have a very detailed submission packet on their website. It's not just an ad, though. If they accept your book and they will carry it, you have the honor and privilege of giving them a ton of money, and then they will also give you an ad.
Yeah.
An ungodly amount of money.
Ungodly amount of money. And they take a huge chunk out of everything.
Yes.
Yeah, that's the other thing. They want things below wholesale cost, just so you know.
That process is outlined very clearly.
50% to 60% off cover.
Yeah. So that's where it came down to unit price being very, like, if you want to be in Diamond, unit price has to be low. Because your cost is going to be, like, I'll give you straight numbers, I'll be honest. M3, the trade paperback, retails $24.99. My unit cost is $6.99 or $6.50, I'm sorry, per book. But when Diamond buys the books, they pay me $9.99. So it's not very much profit that I'm making in Diamond, but the fact that I'm now distributed to different, to all over the country into different stores, you hope that it evens itself out. But the whole idea of if your unit cost is really too high, then Diamond really isn't going to do anything for you because of the huge markdown that they want.
Yeah, and they have to pass that on to the comic shops.
Yes.
And there's only, you have to think now, it's growing now, but there's over 2,000 brick-and-mortar comic shops and about 1,500 online retailers.
Yeah.
That's like the final numbers. So when you go through that, and by the way, I solicited to them, and I was rejected at first.
For reals?
Well, for Tommy, because I guess, you know, a little boy with a serial killer imaginary friend didn't hit the right tone. But,
so you say you win the lottery and Diamond, not lottery, but Diamond likes you, then you have to be psychic and be like, I guess I'll print 2,000?
No. They get their, every retailer gets an order form, and then they order from the thing. At the back of previews.
The big book that you see that's called Previews,
yes.
That's actually for solicitations that are 2 to 3 months ahead of time.
Yeah.
So they get an idea, and then they say,
now, this is the thing. I also own a comic book shop now in Miami. I also have my own little small little comic shop. And
so you need to open up your own comic book shop.
Yeah.
I am full of great business decisions. as my wife tells me all the time. What happens is that you go through the catalog and you say what's hot, what's everything. The last previews that came out, now it's DK3 because of Dark Knight 3 for DC Comics. They tell you all the solicitations, what's going on, and yada, yada, and everything that's going on in it, and the variant covers, and this and this and that. They flip through it. When you go to the DC section, or Marvel has its own separate catalog, it's its own magazine. Then there's a DC section, there's Boom, there's
IDW.
They all have their own sections with their own color and everything. Full page ads. Image has just one after another. And then they have the rest of the book. That's where you're going to be. And if you have a book and rule writing, it's this much, like this much space on a page that you're going to get out of, what is it, like 500 pages.
Do you remember the old like JCPenney wish books? Yeah. The old Sears wish book? That's it. That's what it is. Like, it's this giant, like, Christmas wish book that they give to retailers.
You're dating yourself by saying that.
I'm 38, and I'm proud.
So, once you get into Diamond, do you get sales from that?
Well, then, that's where you have to, now they're soliciting the book, the shops get it. Now, all they're doing is putting you in a catalog. You can buy advertisement, which is like us, I think, a full-page ad. They messed up on, like, our second issue. They gave us a full-page color ad. When I asked for a black and white ad...
Bonus!
This is the difference. Full-page color ad is $2,400. Black and white ad, it's like $1,600. And I had, look at my email from October, da-da-da-da. Like, you messed up. I asked for a black and white ad. You printed a color. Ha-ha-ha. Here's your check. No foolsies. I can't tell you.
No backsies,
you know. So they were like, okay, you've got us now. So I got that full page color ad, and then you get that big color ad, and then I got the big color ad because I wanted to be. Then what we did was we called over at least 800 different comic shops within a 2 month period. And, hey, how you doing? And you know, and just talk to them about our product, tell them where it is. It's in this page. Here's the advertisement. And then we also had variants. So we had for every 5 issues, you get a variant for the book. You know, this and this and that. We can do this kind of stuff. We sent stuff to people. We did an ash can for the first issue of Ravenous, which is an old 90s thing that they used to do. It's a little comic book that shows a preview of it and show it to them. You know, I'm proud to say that I've seen comic shops sell our ash cans for $80. So it worked out for them. And we did stuff like that. And you're constantly calling and constantly trying to, like, pull them in. And I've had comic shops literally tell me on the phone, if it's not Marvel or DC, I don't order it.
Yeah. Shelf space is really premium for shops. There was Mark Wade is now owning a shop. He owns one of the All Yeah shops now in, I think, Illinois. And he wrote actually a really good article about how he never really understood how shelf space worked. And now that he's a retailer, he does.
Mm-hmm.
So shelf space is premium.
Yeah.
Because we're all talking about indie, our experience, I had been publishing at the time I first approached Diamond, we'd been publishing like 2.5 years. And I threw a bunch of books at them at the same time to sort of see run and filled out the form perfectly and did a separate form for every single one of the titles. One of the titles at the time, we were working with a team who had a lot of money. They had hired a Harvey Winner for the artist, and they put out their first issue. So you have all the things going for it. They were ready to do the print run. Diamond rejected it. And they rejected it because they didn't want to have single issues from a small company like us. However, at the time, we had also submitted a trade, and it was a combination of two issues, kind of like pumped up and all this other stuff at the right price. They accepted that. And the artists were kind of mid-tier, not so well-known, but then they accepted that. And they picked all of our anthology. 5 years later, we now have our anthology going through Diamond and some previews now, and then another graphic novel is slated for next year, and you are marketing 3 months in advance, and that part is correct. But the reason I sort of jumped in on this, though, too, is that, you know, on the indie side, Diamond is its own brass ring, but then the work is never over. There's always this next level of work that you're going to have to do, and the marketing never, ever, ever, ever stops. So it's hard enough to get your book completed and ready, and when you're starting on the ground level, my advice is to really work on getting a lot of issues under your belt before you were to approach Diamond, before you submit that, because then you have the option of, hey, if they'll take single issues from you guys, cool, awesome.
Yeah.
But then you have them ready to go and there are no delays. But then enough issues for a trade to then offer to Diamond.
Mm-hmm.
That's
and I would say, like, Diamond's a very many-headed hydra. There's... Right. Depending on who you have as your representative there, who talks to, what the week is, what they're looking for, they could say, well, not this week. We don't want to see another thing. Like, they're picky about superhero books, like, because there's a lot of them, you know?
Marketing never stops. We're doing it forever.
Yeah.
So you'd rather have your book on a shelf at Barnes & Noble instead of going through Diamond. What's that like?
I have no idea.
We are in the Barnes & Noble catalog, the digital catalog, getting actual shelf space at the stores. In my experience, you do have to be tied to distributors. I think Diamond still distributes to Barnes & Noble.
Yeah. And then there's the other one. What's,
right. So you do have some Diamond books. So if you're, for instance, you know, the graphic novel that I do is Poe. Like, there's a tied Edgar Allan Poe. So it's prime for that market in addition to comics. But going through a distributor, in terms of shelf space in Barnes & Noble, you have to go through a distributor. And Diamond is one of the distributors that they will carry.
Yeah.
However, you can still be in the Barnes & Noble catalog. And okay. There are very clear, there's a very clear outline of how to apply to do that. And then being available on Amazon, you can apply and get a book on Amazon quite easily. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a whole problem. And there's other book distributors and types. There's some that will get your book and they print it and they have their own edition. There's a bunch of different ways of doing about it. I mean, Diamond's the main comic book one, but far as books, it's just like within books, instead of cons, there's book fairs, mm-hmm. which we're learning about, which
well,
is
the,
awesome.
The Baltimore book fair right now that's going on.
I used to work at Barnes & Noble there too, and the other thing I can give you is that if you can get into their digital catalog, which takes a little bit of time, but once you're in the Barnes & Noble system, if you go to your local Barnes & Noble and you talk to whoever's there and say your local writer, artist, and you've got a book, I've got a book in your system, people can go to the info desk and order your book, any book in the Barnes & Noble catalog at the info desk. So you can say, hey, we're at Barnes & Noble, just go up to the info desk and order my book and they're going to get it for you and then they take care of the shipping and all that other stuff. But you can also arrange a signing with that local Barnes & Noble, if that's the community. But that's, you know, the other part of marketing. You can go to any comic shop, and you don't have to have a book in Diamond at a local comic shop to do a signing, because most shops are trying to plug into their community, and they will arrange. You work out a deal with them, and then you have an event and do a signing that way. They like to have people in the store and bring people in.
If there's a local comic book shop in your area, be friends with them. And even if it's not your comic book shop that you go to, make friends with them, hang out, gauge what that shop, what the clientele of that shop wants. Like you said, that there are shops, they only carry Marvel and DC, and that's it. I was in Nyack, New York, a couple weeks ago, and my husband and I walked into this tiny little shop. And we saw, basically everything was Marvel and DC. And I said to the guy, you know, do you carry, I just finished working on a crossover called Swords of Sorrow for Dynamite. And I said, oh, are you carrying any of the Swords of Sorrow books? And he goes, and he looks around and he's like, literally, I've got like 3.5 walls. Like there's only so much shelf space that I have. I've got the long boxes with the old books. And I've got, you know, one tiny wall with stuff. And I've got Marvel, I've got DC, and maybe some of the Image books, but that's it. That's all I have the physical room for. And, you know, it's not the fault of the retailer for saying, I'm only carrying Marvel and DC because they sell. Because, you know what, let's be honest. I mean, they got to make rent, too. You know, so, but if you go to your local shop and you sort of gauge what the clientele is, then maybe you can say, oh, you know, well, I have a comic that I'm working on that works in this. And then you can drop off books and do things like consignment, mm-hmm. where, like, they'll buy books directly from you to sell, or you're like, oh, I'll do a... I'll drop these books off, and when you sell the books, you know, at the end of the week, I'll come back and we'll settle up, and then you, you know, you split the books 50-50 or, you know, whatever you guys end up doing. But it's good to know what's out there and what the clientele want, because some shops are, like, all indie, and, like, that's it, and, like, Bergen Street Comics in Brooklyn is, like, very, very indie. And so...
Rest in peace.
What?
Bergen Street.
Yeah, rest in peace. But it was, like, very, very indie-focused. But then a lot of the other comic book shops are very, you know, Marvel and DC because, you know, that's what sells. You know, that's a guarantee sell kind of thing.
Yeah. And as a comic shop owner, like, a lot of times you curate. So I have to have the Marvel and the DC. I got variant whores that come in all the time, and they're crazy for
their
variant.
They're the ones who sunk it in the beginning.
I know. I know. We're heading towards that again. But they hey, man, when a guy comes in and we're willing to pay $60 for an amazing Spider-Man variant, I'm like, all right, dude. Like... Let's do this. You're keeping the lights on.
I will not lie. I paid $20 for my Gabriel DeLotto Winter Soldier variant on Original Sin. I will not lie.
Bam. But, you know, we try to go and have as many indies out there. And a lot of times it's just introducing people to stories. And amazing how people's eyes light up. And luckily I have, like, a lot of punk rock, like, biker types because we're also a tattoo shop. They come in. So they come in and they're like Humans and Fight Club. And Fight Club, I have a bunch of muscle heads that come in and get it. Like, bro, you have the new Fight Club? Like, don't hurt me.
And they come in and they're like bleeding. And they're like, well, I need the new Fight Club. Yeah. My eyes are swollen shut, but I have to read it.
Exactly. So it's audience for everybody. But, you know, be friends with your... If I don't know what you want, I can't get it for you. So as... a comic creator, you have to go to them and say, you know, what's going on? What's in it people are into? Because some people are also, let me tell you about this. I have a lot of people who are like, I'm done with Marvel. I'm done with DC. What's new? What's different? What can I read? And I'm like, here, sir, there's a comic book company called Creature. And it helps me out. Any more questions?
I'm going to say, do something, have something in there that's, like, something that's really, like, hot right now, something that's in trendy, and then at the same time, do something that is different. Because it is the age-old thing, commercial art versus high art. Is it still art? Yes, but nobody's going to buy it. You know, so comic book companies, especially if you want to work for a Marvel or DC or something like that, you want to show them, I have something that it's a great idea. But there's not really a time for it. The other thing is, if you do something that's, like, very esoteric and very funky, they might really like it. There's just no place for it right now. But they'll keep it in mind. And they'll say, okay, you know, it could be 6 months. It could be a year. But it might open up. And trends change all the time. Like, I'm wearing bell bottoms. When was the last time I did that? It was 1983, you know? So.
As far as ideas?
As far as ideas or the kind of art that you make, would you say, like, oh, I can do horror, I can do sci-fi, I can do this? Like, is it good to have different...
I can tell when, for me, because I'm an artist and a writer, I can tell when somebody's BSing me on a page. Like, I could tell when somebody, like, wow, you hated drawing this. You were dying and you went, coffee pot, you know? But then when it came to the tentacle monster, oh, man, the tentacles were like, and they had the hooks and the barbs, and look at it. You know, you can tell. try to bring that as much into anything that you do. You want 100% all the time. Because if somebody says, hey, man, this is, what's up with this? You're going to feel it. You're going to see it. You're going to be like, yeah, you're right, and this and that. But as far as versatility, we're publishing in previews now. We have a book called Burnt. It was originally a zine that came into the comic book shop from my friend named Hyrule. Crazy Cuban guy that came in, and he's like, man, I draw comics. All right, cool. We kept laughing about the comic. It's about a dog that goes to hell after drinking too much. And it's ridiculous. It's the most ridiculous. And the first, like, page is like this horrible story about how his dad was like, oh, he was drawing comics. And it's a true story. It's the dog talking to his dad, but it's what happened to him. He goes, he's drawing comics. And he goes, look, Bobby, look, I drew this comic. He goes, that's great, son. That's awesome. That's really cute. He goes, yeah, one day I'm going to be a comic book artist. He goes, you're just going to end up being a prostitute under a bridge somewhere if you do that. Don't do that. And I'm wording it nicely now. And it was the first page. We're like, bah! We just were laughing. We had it in the shop. We sold a bunch of copies. We kept picking it up. It was a little printed zine, like little Kinko's. And we're like, and me and John were like, dude, let's print this. This is awesome. Like, we're enjoying it. It's not in our cup of tea of what we do, technically. But we're like, dude, we dig this. Why not print it? And so we came back to him. He goes, you want to make a comic? He goes, hell yeah. And we said, you know, put 12 more pages on the sucker and let's put it out there. And that's it. So I would say, like, if you can get me excited about it, that's what I'm going to look for. And I want to see, like, an energy behind it. If I want to see, like, oh, crap, this is cool, you're into it. Because if not, if it's just like, it's a guy, and he has, like, laser eyes, and he's like, I'm done, get out, you know.
What do I look for? Just a little bit of advice that I heard from someone else that actually sounded like an advice that it might be. If you can get your hands on a test script of something that has been published and has been accepted by, like, one of the bigger companies or a company that you respect and the kind of company you want to go work for, that is a nice litmus test for yourself. Comparing, like, maybe take a look at a script that you haven't actually seen the issue, and actually take a look at the mechanics of that page, lay it out for yourself, and then see what was actually published. And it's something you're constantly, like, obviously we're artists, we're constantly surrounded by things that we're going to compare ourselves to or draw inspiration from, which is another way to say it. But kind of take a look at it. For all of our anthologies, we do an open call in January. And it's one of those things where in order to keep from being inundated by pitches and keep from being inundated by portfolios, by just other people's kinds of ideas about what they think our theme is, we ask for a digital portfolio, a link to a digital portfolio. You have to have a link to work online. And this is true for writers, and this is true for artists. And, you know, as a writer, I feel for you guys, I'm in the same boat. It's hard to get an artist. It's expensive to get an artist. It's difficult to find something. But however, it's just expected. This is an industry standard. And if you want to work in this industry, if you want to be in this industry, that's what's required. So have a link to your work online, writers and artists.
Well, I think we're already kind of over time. But where can these fine people find you guys?
Artist Alley, a 222. Hopefully I remember 222 because it's an Artist Alley. But find us on redstylo.com. Red_stylo on Twitter.
Mm-hmm. I'm an Artist Alley too, but I'm actually, like, I'm leaving this panel to, like, go pack up because I do not want to get stuck in 3 hours of Ravens traffic anymore like I did last year. So, but I'm at 282. I'm actually, like, right.
Just find me.
Just find her.
Yeah, like, right behind her.
Yeah. Just go to her. She's better than I am anyway. I know that. But you can find, if you want to see some of my stuff, you can go to ericaschultzwrites.com. You can go to m3comic.com if you wanted to look at some stuff from M3. I'm incredibly vulgar, and I'm on Twitter at ericaschultz42, but if you have any proclivities, don't go there, because I'm just bad.
Yeah, like, we're behaving up here. This isn't it.
Yeah, this is, like, really, really, really good behavior.
I recorded this, so I'm going to hopefully have it on a podcast that I do on occasion. You can find a lot of my stuff on fuacata.com. That's the Cuban Spanish word for blam, pretty much.
For what?
Blam.
Oh, blam?
Yeah,
oh,
or blamo, or smash.
Oh,
or
fuacata.
Fuacata,
okay.
F-W-A-C-A-T-A.
Now I know.
Fuacata.
Fuakara.
Like Mufasa.
Yeah, Mufasa. Well, it's Fuakara. But you can find us also at creatureentertainment.com. We're also down on the floor, publisher booth 2012, next to Neil Adams and some dudes that have a really stupid wall put up against us. And yeah, so yeah, and with that, Fuakata, you can find me everywhere, Twitter, what have you. That's my thing. So Fuakata. And come by the booth. And if you have any questions, I'll take it after the panel. All right, guys, thank you so much.
Thank you very much, guys. Appreciate it.
All right. Good seeing you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you guys for doing the panel. I will probably go have a cigarette first because I am a heinous person.
So that was the panel. Hopefully you guys got as much of it out of it as I did. It was a great, 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 awesome time. I always love hanging out with them. Enrica and Erica, they know so much, and they're knee-deep in it. Like, Erica's doing a lot of new stuff and everything else. You can find a lot of her stuff online. And I just had something open from Comics Alliance about her, but their website is horrible. But she was already a Hire This Woman on there as a writer. She's amazingly talented. She does the M3 book that she has on there, as well as Unauthorized Winston Churchill documentary. And I got a couple other things. This is kind of old. I know she's doing stuff for Dynamite right now, so she's just kick-ass. Let me just find her stuff. And, so yeah, you can find a lot of M3 on Comixology and Amusedom.com. You can also check out M3Comic.com for all her stuff. Facebook.com/M3Comic also. And for Enrica, you can always go to redstylo.com. Let me see, make sure. That's her publishing imprint and has done so many awesome things. And you can find all the links to the Red Stylo, to the Twitter and everything on there. Redstylo.com. Right now, the 27 anthology is up for previews, and you can order it through your local comic book shop. It is a gorgeous book, I'll tell you that much. I got one, and I looked at it, and I was just like, wow. I mean, it's a hardcover with this great front on it, and the artwork inside is badass, and it's just, she's done an amazing job with it. So you can always find her on there, and, you know, and if not, hit me up on Fuakata and all the other sites. As always, like we said on there, Fuakata, F-W-A-C-A-T-A. It's this magic void. And hopefully you guys got something out of this. I think it's really cool to go to these cons and get advice and talk to people that are knee-deep in it. They're going to tell you what's up. There's no reason to lie, unless they're dicks. We're not dicks. Not in that way. So enjoy, you guys, and hopefully I will be back tomorrow with some more stuff. All right, as always, you can contact us here, Fuakata.com, Fuakata on Twitter, Fuakata on Instagram, Fuakata on Facebook. And you can always contact me at secretmediagroup.com. secretmediagroup@gmail.com. And there you go. All right, guys. See you next time.